Hey there, welcome to the Album Adventures podcast. My name is Sam Shinazi. I'm here with my colleague and, more importantly, my friend, Aaron Wally Wallace. We call him Wally. And this is a new podcast. Everyone's got a podcast, so we thought we'd have one too. And it's going to feature music, specifically albums. And I would like to throw to my colleague and good friend, Aaron Wally. Why don't you tell us about the idea behind the show?
Yes, now it's been a long time coming, I guess. We've talked about doing a podcast for a very long time, and one day in my many long hours that I spend driving to and from the office, I came up with the idea of, hey, this is a cool album. I really love this album. I'm not sure if Snaz has heard this album. Maybe we should have a chat about it and see what we think. And from there, I guess the idea just grew that we'd pick some of our favourite albums of all time that maybe the other person had heard but wasn't too familiar with, and we'd sort of run through it and bounce ideas off each other and see what we liked and didn't like and go from there.
Yeah, so there'll be some episodes where one of us have never heard the album, and there'll be other examples like this first episode where we both heard the album. I haven't heard it for a long time. You're more on top of it. You might guide us down the street, and I've been listening to the album for about 3 weeks now, so I'm all over it now, and that's kind of the idea behind the show. So without going too much further, Wally, why don't we disclose what album number one is?
Yes, Snaz, well, you told me I wasn't allowed to start with Weezer album straight off the bat, and you told me I needed to go for something big. I don't think there's anyone bigger than the Beatles, and we're going to turn straight into Abbey Road today, I think, which is their last album that they put together in the studio, and I actually think it is one of their best albums. It's a lot different to a lot of their earlier stuff, but I think that when we go through it, that a lot of people would be very surprised by how timeless this album is. I really didn't think it sounded like, I think it's 53 years old, something like that. Came out in 1970. It's quite an old album. Did you think it sounded like that, like it was timeless?
Yeah, I couldn't pin a year on it for sure. I agree with that. I was going to make a joke, it's almost as old as you, but I won't do that. We will talk about the production and the timelessness of it, but I wanted to quickly ask you about your history with the album.
Yes, as my dad was a big Beatles fan, he actually had all of the Beatles LPs, and I guess growing up was a lot of the music that I listened to. Obviously, you grow up listening to your mum and dad's or your siblings' music. Dad had all the Beatles albums, and so I sort of got to listen to all of them, all on a record, not on a CD. I've always thought that Beatles albums really only sound, I'm going to sound like a vinyl snob, I'm not a vinyl snob at all, but Beatles albums sound like Beatles albums when they're on the LP. And I just guess, yeah, this was one of my favourites. It's got a few songs that I really love. It's got some that are a bit of okay, but we'll see. We'll go through those and see how we go. And when we talked about the Beatles and said, hey, let's do a Beatles album, and you were sort of saying that you liked a lot of their earlier stuff and were more familiar with their earlier things, so I thought, well, why don't we go right to the end and we'll go to that and, yeah, see what it sounds like.
Yeah, it is a fascinating album, which we're going to get into through this episode. We are going to do a little bit of a track by track. We're not going to spend hours on each song. We might not even get to each track every week of every album, but just a bit of a indication of how we're going to do things. Before we get there, Wally, we're both in the stats business, the same stats business. Why don't you run us through some stats about the record?
I think it would be silly if we didn't do some stats there. As I said, Abbey Road's the Beatles' 11th and final studio album. Everybody, even if you haven't heard the album, you've seen the album cover of the Beatles walking across the road at Abbey Road there on the pedestrian crossing. It was recorded in April, July and August in 1969, and it was released on the 26th of September 1969 in the UK and the 1st of October 1969 in the US, reaching number one in both countries. It's 47 minutes long. There's 16 plus one tracks. We'll get to that. It sold upwards of how many copies do you reckon it sold? Just as a rough guess, what do you reckon?
Overall, over time, oh my gosh, like 20 million maybe?
It sold upwards of 32 million copies. That's pretty massive on anybody's scale, I think. Is it Thriller's the highest selling album of all time? I think that's about 70 million copies like that. So 32 million, not too bad. I've had a look at some of the scores from the critics, so we might as well run through that first and then get to what we think at the end. It does get a lot of hundreds. I don't know, I think to get 100 an album is going to be pretty perfect. I don't know if I'd call this perfect. It's very good. I don't know if I'd call it perfect, though.
So Pitchfork, who are a very notable American website, gave it a 10.
Yeah, 10 out of 10 on Pitchfork. I think Metacritic's got the critic score of 99 and an average user score of 9.1. So it's very, very highly regarded album. Again, like I've always really liked the album, but yeah, 10 out of 10 from Pitchfork's pretty high praise. we'll see if it really deserves it.
One thing that stuck out to me when you're reading out those stats is that it was recorded over April, July, August 1969. It was released within a month or 6 weeks after that.
Didn't muck around once upon a time. That thing's a whole lot of post-production going on.
I mean, these days, you make a record, it might come out within a year. The turnaround, depending on how you do things. We do know that the Beatles used to do two or three albums a year anyway. But just seeing that in black and white is pretty fascinating. And we saw that it was big all around the world. It was huge in Australia.
12 times platinum in the US, 8 times platinum in the UK, and 3 times platinum in Australia. So I think we've started. You told me to pick a big gun. I don't know that I really could have picked a bigger gun than I've heard.
Yeah, and a fascinating subject, the Beatles. One of the best bands of all time, if not the best. And when I say best, I mean most important, most well-known. Not necessarily my favorite, but a fantastic band, obviously. A bunch of people might have seen the documentary on Apple Music recently. If you haven't, we encourage you to go watch it. It is mind-blowing.
Definitely watch it. It was awesome. Just to see the way that their thought process worked and the way they got through things was incredible.
And for those who have seen the documentary, where does this sit in the timeline?
So Abbey Road and Let It Be, very similar timelines. Abbey Road sort of came out after Let It Be. They were recorded. A lot of these songs were recorded for Let It Be, even for maybe the White Album, the one before. So sort of all in that, the Let It Be period where they were, there's a lot of talk. And I think even before that, the documentary came out. Like, I think people thought that they really hated each other by this stage and it was very acrimonious. I didn't get that at all from the Let It Be thing. Sure, there was problems, there was issues. But I think that, I guess when you live in a bubble like they did, that really, we sort of talked about this before we started recording, that really the world's first megastars. Like, I guess Elvis was a megastar, but the Beatles, it was just ridiculous what they went through. So I think by this stage of their career, they maybe had almost had enough of each other, but still good enough to get in the studio and whack out 15 tracks.
Let's start with track one, and we will talk more about the album and how it progresses. But I want to start with track one, which is Come Together. We're going to give you a little snippet now. So, Wally, the first thing I recognized when listening back to this for the first time in a long time, decades, was how bluesy the opening riff was. And then, as a spoiler, in my opinion, the majority of the album, not the whole thing, but majority of it is influenced by what I would call a southern blues style from America. And I had no idea about that.
Really, when you think about the Beatles, people might think straight away to songs like She Loves You or I Want to Hold Your Hand and stuff like that. But this is really, came to me straight away was funky. This is a very funky, yeah, the bluesy, the bass line, the way that that's dancing around on the bass. And I think I found somewhere swampy it was described as, which I think that's what you're saying is the southern blues.
The reason you're saying funky is because you're hearing bass.
Yeah, definitely.
With all due respect, it's not funk. It is, in my opinion, more of a southern swampy blues thing you're hearing. Funk is, I'm only saying that because funk is a whole different genre. Definitely involving the bass, but it's a bit more kind of, you know, dancey.
I can dig
funky,
that. Yeah. You know. It's just, yeah, to me, it was, yeah, just that. It's the groove. Yeah. It's got a bit of the groove on the bass, definitely.
Well, I didn't associate the Beatles with that, really. You think pop, you think a bit of rock, but I guess when you record so many songs in such a small span, 10 years or whatever, the genres are going to start coming up thick and fast.
I think even calling it a bit gritty is probably fair enough. Yeah,
we'll talk about that.
Not like what modern music, you think of gritty in modern music, but yeah, for something coming out in 1969, it's...
And for a band that was so revered for pop music, catchy songs, harmonies, they really did turn the tables around this period. And we'll also get into a different genre as well, a different influence I can hear later on, which is the Beach Boys. But we'll touch on that a little bit later. But for now, Wally, Come Together, great starting track. John's on lead vocals. What are your thoughts on the song?
I think it does set the tone of the album really well. Like you've said, it's straight away you get this, whoa, what's this new sound coming out of the Beatles? It is the last album that they put together. So I guess, like you say, they're not scared to push the boundaries at this stage. It's like, hey, we're going to do this. We love this sound. I like the song. I don't know if I'd say I'd love the song. It's a, as I said, it's a pretty groovy, the bit of the beat to get into it. I don't know if many people would pick up on the lyrics, the really the shoot me at the start of it, which you probably can't pick up because I think the bass covers the me definitely. So John definitely pushing the boundaries on maybe his drug paraphernalia lyrics that may have been going on at this stage with the Beatles.
Are you confident that's what he says?
Yeah, I'm 99% certain that the lyric is shoot me when he says the...
So you're talking about the...
Shoot me. Yeah, definitely.
And they definitely were experimenting with drugs by this point, obviously a time before that as well. So that, yeah, that is an interesting twist. And John's contributions throughout the album are probably, he has the fewest contributions throughout the album compared to the other three guys. I would suggest maybe he was at the end of his tether.
You're suggesting he may have checked out by this stage?
Maybe. I mean, what he does on there is pretty good.
Do you think it's pretty incredible that... As you say, it probably is fair enough to say he may have checked out by this stage, that they can still just put, I've checked out, here's some songs I wrote, whatever, chuck them on an album.
Yeah, and when you listen to start to finish, it's not like you listen to it and go, whoa, John's not invested. You know, like they sounds like the Beatles in their own way. Now, I've noticed that on our rundown sheet, you've given song ratings. Are you standing by these?
This was on the train yesterday. I just thought I'd better put down a number and maybe I could go a little bit higher and lower than these.
We will do an overall album rating.
We'll do an overall. I sort of ranked this one as this. I wasn't really sure where to put it. It's the first one, so you're setting the tone for how you're marking everything on the album. So I put 7.5. I think that might be a bit harsh. I think it's probably an 8, I'd say, really.
I was going to say, out of the two of us, amongst our friends, colleagues, and people who know us, I am easily the easy marker out of the two of us.
And you're going higher than 7.5? Where are we going?
For Come Together, I'd give it an 8.
Yeah, 7.5, 8. I think that's fair enough. I definitely think it's one of the songs, if you've never heard the album, chuck it on, track one. It'll give you straight away a really good feel for this is what's coming.
It's one of their more well-known songs though, right?
Well, you'd think so. If you haven't heard it, you probably haven't heard many Beatles tracks. So.
And what's interesting then is they go into a very beautiful ballad, a George ballad, track two, one of his... most popular songs, you would say?
I think it's fair to say this is probably George's best song. I think that's at least in the discussion for what's the best song that George ever wrote. And we are, of course, talking about Something. Now, I'd be very surprised if you've never heard this song. If you've ever had a radio on somewhere with some kind of classic hit station, you've heard this song definitely.
So Wally, that was Something, track two by George. Where do you think George is at in this part of the Beatles stage? Because we know in the documentary that he did a walkout, for a spoiler.
I think it's fair to say, to put not too fine a point on it, that he was sick of all the bullshit. I think it's pretty fair to say that he'd had enough of maybe not fame and maybe not even of the music, but I just think it was all the stuff around it with the... Oh, there was a lot of money problems going on at this stage and there was a lot of arguing and, yeah, I just kind of think he had had enough. But to be at that stage of, again, like we talked about John, that he'd kind of checked out. George had already tried to leave the Beatles at one stage by the time he's recorded this song and then just manages to churn this one out. It's a pretty amazing piece of songwriting. I think any, not that I'm a songwriter, I've never written a song, but I think if you were a songwriter and you were trying to write a ballad, you'd be pretty happy with yourself if you'd come up with this song.
Yeah, and we know that George, through the documentary, had a bit of a issue with the two main guys, Lennon and McCartney, of course, getting all, not so much all the fame, but they had all the songs on the records, basically. And then they give one to George, one to Ringo every now and then. Yeah, there's a whole other podcast episode about that, I'm sure, to be made. But this is a pretty good line in the sand for him to go, yeah, I can do it too.
Maybe even the other members of the band sort of sat back and was like, you know what, George, he can do this. He's right at our level. And it's a great song. I love the bridge. Who doesn't love a bridge in a song? The way that the song builds to the bridge is brilliant. And I just think that, yeah, in terms of George's output for the Beatles, if this isn't his best song, as I said, it's certainly close.
And you've given it a 9.
I have put that one down as a 9, yes. I think that's anybody trying to write a song, a love song, some kind of ballad, if you can come up with a song as good as this, and again, I'm sure anyone listening to us right now has heard this song before. If you haven't heard it in a while, go back and listen to it again. It's a pretty timeless ballad. It's a great piece of songwriting.
Slow, mellow start to the album. You've got Come Together with the bluesy riffage going on, and then you have something, a clear-cut ballad. That leads us into track 3.
Joan was quizzical, studied metaphysical science in the home. Late nights all alone with a test tube.
So Wally, that was Maxwell Silverhammer, and it's fair to say by track 3 things are getting pretty kooky.
I think, Snaz, this is probably where we're going to have our first disagreement about whether we like a song or not. Now, this is typical Paul kooky, strange lyrics. I've read a couple of places that John called it Paul's granny music. George has called it fruity. They all hated recording this song. This is Paul McCartney at his whimsical best, and I wonder if it's the type of thing, listening to it now, like you listen to the lyrics, it's like, man, what is he going on about? But I think when you listen to it, I guess for me, being listening to this album for the first time when you're a little kid, these are the songs that you're going to be drawn to, yeah? So this is Maxwell Silverhammer talking about a guy running around, banging people on the head with a silver hammer. There's one line that I've always loved, and it says, "The Rose and Valerie screaming from the gallery, say he must go free. The judge does not agree." That's such a great line. I've always loved that.
It is out there as far as, I think as far as songs go. But it is still catchy, still a lot of melody. Interesting choice of the track listing though. Track 3, historically speaking, Wally, a music industry thing had always been, I'm not sure if it started then, but in the 80s, 90s onwards, track 3 was always your strongest song, your single, your hit song, what you wanted to be the big one, track 3.
Pretty sure Paul wanted this to be a single, and the way, when you read about that it was recorded, that he did track after track trying to get it right. They brought an anvil in for the studio for Ringo to hit with a hammer to make the noise. You read lots of comments. All of the, I think the other three all hated, I don't know if they hated the song, but they hated the process of what Paul was trying to do, was to make this, like John said, it's granny music. It's never going to be a single. And I think they did it over and over and over again to the point that they were sick of it. So maybe this was, I think it's definitely Paul's doing. If I want this at number 3, this is my great song for the album. Maybe he was a little bit too close to the subject matter to see.
And you've gone 8 out of 10 for this masterpiece.
I think that's nostalgia talking. I don't actually think it's...
Hey, it's your opinion.
I don't really think it's probably not an 8. I feel it's an 8 out of 10. I think if you're critically sitting back and look at it, that most people would probably agree with John that this is very strange. But just for a nostalgia point of view, I would give this an 8 for me.
I'm going to sit back and critically look at it. And it's the Beatles. So you can't just judge them like any other band or artist. So you have to give them a bit of leeway because they're the Beatles. They more or less invented what you and I and some of our listeners like called music. I know that's an exaggeration. I'm going to give it a 5.
I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, I just can't get my head around it.
There's probably a longer discussion to be had about, we will get to it later on, about how much I've all of a sudden become a Weezer fan. Weezer has a lot of fruity lyrics like this, definitely. And I think it's definitely, maybe I'm drawn to fruity lyrics. That's why I've given it the 8.
You've mentioned Weezer 4 times already. there's a quota on 5.
We need a buzzer.
Episode.
We need a Weezer buzzer. Stop talking about Weezer.
You got one more mention in this episode, otherwise they'll be cut. So we get to the next track, which is Paul, to me sounding like John, doing Oh Darling, a really hectic bluesy song, and he really, really, really lets rip with his vocal.
It's not very often that you hear Paul do a bit of a screaming yelp, getting his voice to break. And I'm reading about this song too, this was the one that he came in, he knew it was going to, he could do damage to his voice just by screaming, I guess. So he'd come in, first take of a morning. Okay, we're going to do Oh Darling. He'd rock out a take. Okay, that wasn't great. See you again tomorrow. And they'd try it again tomorrow.
All right, that's a snippet of Oh Darling, which we were discussing before. He really lets rip in that one, Wally. John is on a record as saying Paul should have let him sing it, which is interesting because I thought it was him.
Yeah, I think it's probably fair enough. John was more the shouty, screamy, heavier type singer, which we'll get to in a couple of songs, I think, definitely, that we'll pick up on that. But yeah, I think it was a... He has a few songs like this, I think, in the back catalogue you go to. Songs like I'm Down, I think Paul's screaming in that. There's a few. Helter Skelter is a rare one that he's definitely, he's getting his, probably his rock voice out, fair enough, rather than his pop. Is that a thing, though, like the one take in the morning that you got to look after your voice? Like, would you really, could you really blow it out that much?
So it depends when you like to record. For people listening, I play some music, I record some music, and I'm more of a definitely afternoon, nighttime recording guy. Morning, I find I like my voice to warm up just naturally talking to you about footy or whatever, and then, you know, you go to the studio, you do your vocals. But you can definitely blow it out pretty easy if it's a style you're not used to doing. And depending on your lifestyle and whatever else, your health or whatever. So I could see how in the days of live takes, which this was, he'd be pretty wary about blowing out his voice. Because then if you blow out your voice, you're gone for 3, 4, 5 days.
I think he did a pretty good job of it in the end, really. As you say, it's a rare thing for Paul to be singing in what I'd call a rock voice, really trying to put on that bit of a screaming, bit of an edge to the voice. So I think he did a pretty good job.
So you've gone 7 out of 10, and I would also give it a 7 out of 10. I think it's a solid song. It's one that I knew. I hadn't listened to the Beatles for a long time. It's one that I knew, one that I remembered. I'm not going to say generic, but pretty standard kind of pop rock song. Now, there's nothing standard pop rock about the next track.
I'd like to be under the sea, in an octopus's garden, in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been, in his octopus's garden, in the shade.
A man that is obsessed with underwater things, and that is Ringo Starr. And we have Octopus's Garden, a very catchy, on the surface novelty type pop song, one of his more well-known songs. He probably wrote the least out of the Beatles, is that fair to say?
I think this is only his second one that he wrote, and I think Yellow Submarine he may have written. We'll have to look that up and see what it was, but I did read this was only the second song that he'd written that was on an actual studio album.
So. Right, so he definitely is the least prolific, and as we said, a man who loves underwater things. I find myself liking this the more I listen to it. So when it first came on, having not heard it for a long time, I rolled my eyes. But then the more I listened to this album and then it came to this song, the deeper the meaning and undoubtedly very catchy song.
There's definitely a lot of a theme on this album that, again, I think the more you listen to this song, that yes, it's about an octopus's garden. Octopuses really build gardens. So that's the cool thing from the outset. But do you take this as a definitely, you know what, I'm sick of this shit, the song? It's like it's about, I want to be under the sea, away from all the nonsense that's going on around us, the money, the arguing. I guess Ringo, he's sitting in the back playing the drums, seeing the others sort of pull the band apart, and he's just like, you know what, I'm sick of this. He's got the lyric, I think the resting your head on the seabed and all this. It does get pretty profound the more you listen to it. I guess the only thing I'd say about this is the sequencing a bit weird, being so close to Maxwell Silverhammer, that it's a... Again, another, not a novelty song, but like you say, at first listen, like if you sort of got this on in the car driving along, you hear Maxwell Silverhammer, you're like, what the hell's this? You get a sort of a 12-bar blues rocker in the middle. Then what the hell are they singing about? What's these bubble sound effect and singing about octopuses?
I probably would have gone this track 3 if you wanted to have that type of song there, and I would have pushed the Hammer song down the list quite a way, particularly more towards the medley, which we'll get to. But yeah, good stuff from Ringo. I'm sure he still plays it live. My friend went and saw him in a part of California last week, the Ringo Starr All-Star Band. So he's still very active. You've given that a 7.5. I give it a 7. I think it's very ambitious, which I like.
I think listen to it more than once, though. Like if you haven't heard Abbey Road and you're going to jump on and you're listening through one of the streaming services and you get this one, like straight away you might go, nah, skip, I'm not hearing that. Just give it a couple of goes. It's deeper than you think. No, no pun intended.
So that was I Want You, She's So Heavy, track 6 on Abbey Road. I think this is the song where you might start furrowing your brow a little bit and start looking for things to do around the house. And I say that because having worked so closely to you in the workplace, physically, literally, metaphorically, whatever you want to say, at all hours of the day and night, I know that you are not a jammy kind of guy. You're not into the long extended jams. You don't like white noise. You like your music good and proper.
This is a musician song, yeah? Like, you can see them sitting in the studio, getting into the groove. Let's play this song. It's only got like 13 different words. I think it took 6 months to record off and on. I mean, you listen to the words, you hit the first 5 seconds, you nearly heard all the words. It's basically John's pining for Yoko. Must have been pretty good in the sack, I think, to get a song like this from John Lennon, one of the greatest songwriters of all time, to, you know what, I'm going to do this 13-word song. We're going to put this heavy track to the bottom of it. Now, this is a long way from She Loves You.
Having said what you just said, though, about him being one of the great songwriters, he was part of a song that went, She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah.
Well,
you know what I mean?
What can I say? Guilty as charged. I guess when you're starting out, you're going to write a few little strange ditties, but you just think, like, over the course of how far they've... Well, he did also write a song that just says number nine over and over again. So maybe it's not too far removed from the things he can come up with, but...
The point is, it's a very musical song. Lots of music.
Definitely.
Lots of instrumentation is the word I'm looking for. It does go on for a bit, about 7 minutes long, which for a Beatles song is pretty long, historically speaking. Is he trying to prove a point here? Is he trying to say something aside from the Yoko thing? Is he musically trying to say something? Is he trying to stray to the left? Is he trying to get out of the highway that the Beatles are in? Like, there's got to be something else behind
it. It's almost like a heavy metal song, isn't it? Like, not, well, heavy for those days, as we said, very heavy for 1969, yeah. And as you know, I think it's like 3.5 minutes of the same riff over and over again, the very heavy guitars, the do-do-do-do-do, just going on and on and on. The electric noise at the end, which I'm sure we'll talk about many times, as you said, on this podcast. I don't understand the purpose of electronic noise other than to try and annoy people listening to the song. And a lot of that comes in at the end, very far removed from most people think of the Beatles. I think it's fair to say you're not thinking of this.
You've given it a 7. I'll give it a very respectful 6.5. I don't mind it, but it's the one that I do find myself flicking. And I like that style of music, but I just don't quite connect with it yet.
I definitely find, even if I listen to it, when we get to the end, I might, the end of the lyrics, you hear the riff for you a couple of times. It's maybe I was a bit generous with the 7. Yeah, I think 6.5 is probably fair enough. I don't think I'd skip the whole song. Definitely not the first few times you listen, but it's a mood, yeah? It's a mood more than a song. If you're in the mood, you'd love it. If you're not in the mood, this is too much.
Now, we've been recording this podcast all night long, and...
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
So now we're at side two of the infamous Abbey Road by the Beatles, and one of the most beautiful George songs out there, and definitely just a very beautiful song called Here Comes the Sun. If you are a novice to the Beatles, you would have heard this on an advertising campaign or on the radio or in your parents' stereo or something. It's a very well-known song, and it's a classic.
Definitely a classic, Stans. I think this is another of the... George doing a fair bit of heavy lifting on this album, I think. Something's one of the better songs. This is a great song. This is probably my favourite song off the album. I think as an individual song, we'll get to the medley later on, but I think this is a song. I think this is probably my favourite. But it's funny when you're, again, reading, I'm trying to do a bit of research to the album, seeing what goes on. You read all these stories about the Beatles, and I do love that how well a name drop can be thrown into a Beatles story. You go back to Octopus's Garden. Ringo had borrowed Peter Sellers' yacht. Hey, I'm just going to borrow your yacht. He's sailing around in the Mediterranean. He writes Octopus's Garden. This one, George is a bit down with everything that's going on, all the money troubles, all the fighting. He's just sitting in Eric Clapton's garden. The sun comes out. It's a beautiful day in spring. I'll do this. I do love the way that Eric Clapton just gets name dropped. And I know we did have a laugh. We saw Paul McCartney. It's a few years back now, and it's fair to say Paul's voice probably isn't what it once was, but he still did his best. But the way he loved it, he'd just drop into a story after a song, and just the way he name dropped people. There was one part of the concert when he's like, oh, Keith and Mick just dropped in. Of course, he's talking about the Rolling Stones, but just the way how nonchalantly he name dropped them. We both found that very amusing.
Yeah, so we saw him in 2017, Wally, at Homebush. His voice was not pristine, but it was pretty good for an old fella. Like, I had no issue with it at all.
He certainly wasn't at poor old John Bon Jovi.
Well, that's another episode. Started the show with Hard Day's Night, went to Jet, Can't Buy Me Love. There's a long list I won't go through. And finished with Golden Slumbers, Carry That Weight and The End. Did you remember that?
No, I didn't remember that, but I'm glad that he did.
Very timely, because we're going to get to that. And yes, he name-dropped a lot of people that night. It was quite funny. You've given that song a 9. I would give it a 9. I might even go 9.5. It's very good. Yeah, close to perfect.
If anybody wanted to come in and argue that that's a 10, I wouldn't put up too much of a fight. It's, pretty much the... We talked about before about Something. I think, again, this is pretty much the perfect pop song, yeah? I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, and I don't know. We haven't even discussed what we're going to do about promoting our new podcast, but if we have correspondence with people... And I'm not sure if we want to or not, but if we do, they might have a differing opinion.
We might be able to hit us up on the socials and whatnot. Maybe we'll get some socials happening.
If we have the socials.
If we have them.
We haven't talked about that yet. Usually we just talk about line breaks. So next up we have Because.
Because the world is round, it turns me
That was Because, some sweet harmonies here. And I mentioned at the start of the episode, Wally, about the Beach Boys very briefly. And in songs like this and a few more to come, I can definitely hear the Beach Boys. We know that they had a relationship. They would try and outdo each other in a friendly but competitive way. Brian Wilson, absolute genius. We might get to him on an episode when we go down the road doing that. But I think that the Beach Boys changed the Beatles probably more than what the Beatles changed the Beach Boys. And you can hear it in this with the harmonies.
The harmonies is a very Beach Boys thing, is that they were, I guess, famous for their harmonies in a lot of their songs. And yeah, I did read this is actually Yoko was playing Moonlight Sonata on the piano. John was laying on the lounge. He was probably high on something. I think it's fair enough to say.
Let's not presume that, come on.
And he said, "Can you play that backwards?" So she played the chords backwards, and he sort of got the idea for the song in his head. And I did read that he said, yeah, there's nothing, any kind of metaphor for anything. It's just the words are what they are. It has got a great line, because the sky is blue, it makes me cry. I'm not sure if this is a genius lyric or if it's cringy, but it's certainly a memorable lyric.
So Wally gave that a 7. I'd probably go 6.5, just because, again, I'm not having a deep connection with that song yet. Doesn't mean I won't moving forward, but... Ambitious. I like that. I respect the ambition in music.
Well, again, he's gone from "I Want You See So Heavy" to a harpsichord-driven harmony song. I think ambitious is the right word.
So now we come to a very interesting part of the album, and it is essentially a bunch of short tunes together as one known as a medley, and I might let you explain it better, Wally.
Yeah, I think, Shnaz, this was the, as we said, they were coming to the end. They were trying to put this album out. I think a few of them had some snippets of songs that they sort of had laying around, ones that they'd worked on, hadn't quite finished. And I think Paul sat down with the producer, George Martin, for the record and just went, you know what, we can stitch these together. I can make a couple of tracks here. And I think this is really what Abbey Road's famous for. I think there's a couple of the big singles off the album that people would know. But I think that if you do know the album or if you want to listen to the album, this is what it's about, is these... Some people might count it as one medley. I kind of count it as two. I think it's fair enough to say that there's two medleys here. But yeah, this is the start of the first medley, and it kicks off with "You Never Give Me Your Money."
You never give me your money. You only give me your funny paper. And in the middle of negotiation.
So Wally, when this came on, keeping in mind I hadn't heard this album forever, and it was never an album that I really studied in the past, the melody to "You Never Give Me Your Money" was instantaneously in my head. Like, I knew it. And not because it's a classic melody, I knew it. I remember liking this song back whenever I last listened to the record. And I was then surprised, because in my head, that was the song. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. You know, that was this ballad. And then quickly it stops being a ballad and it goes into this boogie-woogie, as you call it. And I was disappointed in the moment listening back to it for the first time. So I was like, hang on, where'd the song go? And there's a part two to this conversation we'll have.
Yeah, there's two very abrupt changes in this song, but I think this is Paul at his best. I think he's being a little bit cryptic, sort of on the cusp of pop and rock, and as I say, he does go into this boogie-woogie section in the middle. I think this was the thing. This is why these two medleys are probably why I wanted to do this album, for us to talk about to start with. And as I said, if people haven't heard it, okay, you might listen to it and go, this is crap, I don't like it. But I do think that if you want to encapsulate late-era Beatles, I think the way that this medley does it is it shows their whole scope, the whole span of what they're capable of, the way they can take these songs that are, they're not really related at all, and the way they can just chuck them together. I love the second medley better, but I do really love the first medley, and this is the reason to listen to Abbey Road, is the back half of the album.
So we move into Sun King, and again, for me, there's some Beach Boys on here, which is a very obvious statement, of course. I'm going to say not a strong part of the album.
Well, I think John described this song as a piece of garbage I had lying around. Just what do you think? No, I don't think it's a garbage song.
No. Say,
it's probably the weakest bit of the medley going through, but I did laugh when I found that. It's just, yeah, there's a Beatles...
he was a cheeky boy.
A Beatles website that goes through, and it's got sort of going through all the songs, how they recorded it. Yeah, the direct John quote is, this is a piece of garbage I had lying around.
Oh, man. Hearing that statement, and I don't want to get too deep because we're having fun here, but you wish he was around for lots of reasons, but imagine, you know, he'd just be like some older guy now, obviously older guy.
You'd be listening to the John Lennon podcast, not the not the Album Adventures podcast.
Like, good human and just that sense of humor, though, that was there from day one. Anyway, I don't really care for this song, but it's not bad. And it fits a bigger picture.
Yeah, if it was a standalone song, I think it'd be fair enough to say it probably would be a piece of garbage as a standalone song. But just as a way to meander through the medley, I think it's fair enough. There's a lot of... a little bit of nonsense lyrics with them just saying words that I think either are Spanish or sound vaguely Spanish. But a little bit of a nonsense ditty, I think is fair enough to say.
Now, next up, we have Mean Mr. Mustard. And I have to admit, I've heard you sing this around the workplace. You tend to sing a lot out of the 30 people we work with. You are the big singer in the group. And none of our other colleagues know what this is. I think you've got a fondness for this song. Am I correct?
I think it's very catchy.
Okay.
I think it's definitely one of the ones that'll jump out at you straight away when you listen through the track. Very catchy tune. Catchy, funny lyrics. I sent you this morning, there was a newspaper clip of where this came from, that it was a Scottish man that basically wouldn't give his wife any money, and his name was Mr. Mustard. He used to say in the article that when they'd listen to the radio, he'd turn off the lights because you didn't need to see to be able to hear. Shapes in the dark, trying to save paper. Sheeps in a hole in the road.
All right, so we're churning our way through the medleys at the end of the album. And we should point out that some of the songs in the medleys are longer than others, but generally speaking, they're all short snippets of songs. And next we have Polythene Pam. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Polythene Pam, yeah, I think that's fair enough.
This is John.
Definitely a John song. And I find this one, again, it's probably not the strongest lyrically wise. It's a good tune. But the real takeout from this is John putting on his proper Scouse Liverpool accent that they haven't, probably the most they've ever done in a Beatles. The way he's saying girl, kind of a girl, sounds exactly like James Graham. Of course, he's famously from St. Helens, which is in Liverpool. It's definitely, you can pick up on their Scouse accent.
And for people who don't know who James Graham is, he's a rugby league player. And the reason why he talks about rugby league is because he likes rugby league even more than the Beatles.
Maybe.
Sometimes. Sometimes. So Wally, out of the weaker medley songs, I think this one stands above those. I don't have it quite in the caliber of the ones that are coming up next, but this one is one I remembered from my youth and my parents playing it around the house, etc. And it's not too bad.
It's probably more of a complete song than some of the snippets. Yeah, it's a little bit longer. It's probably been better thought through. Again, it's typical Paul at this stage, I guess, when he does like to chop and change and throw little bits of songs in together. This one's apparently about some groupies that broke into his house and stole a picture of his dad. So this, well, but to be fair, now you do read lots of things that Paul is a bit of a revisionist.
Oh,
and he
really
does go back and, yeah, he may have told a few stories a different way over time that he likes to maybe do a bit of a revisionist history. So,
is that on purpose or just part of
I'm not sure if he likes to make things, I guess, more G-rated than maybe they really were. Again, I'm reading, I'm doing the research for this. There was a John line where he said, well, somebody came through a window somewhere. So the story was definitely the truth that someone came through a window. There's another great line in this one. It's about, so I quit the police department. That was just a chance encounter with Paul jumped in a taxi going somewhere in LA. He saw a guy had his detective his old police ID with his taxi ID. And he said, hey, what's the go? And he said, yeah, I used to do this. And so I quit the police department. Chuck it in as a lyric for a song.
And we are talking about songwriters who would churn out 5-10 songs a day that would end up being household songs for generations to come. So it's not a surprise to me that he would ad-lib a little bit here or there for the art, so to speak. So, Wally, do you think that's the end of Medley 1?
I think there is a gap there between those songs and the next group of songs. So, yeah, I'd call that the end of the first medley.
I think I agree with you, especially given the tone of what we're about to hear. These are the last three songs, in theory, that the Beatles are going to release. Is that correct? As in, like, if you're listening to it from start to finish.
They pretty much knew this was the last three songs to ever be on a Beatles album, yes.
Okay. So, first up, we have this.
Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home.
So that is Golden Slumbers. I think, Wally, that is just a remarkable song.
Yeah.
I think, compare it to anyone in the world over the last 50 years, that's one of the greats. I'm not saying it's the greatest song ever written, but if you put all the songs up on a whiteboard of the Beatles, that's going in my top 10, top 5, at least. I think it's beautiful.
A great start to the final of the three medley songs, and I think that, yeah, the way it fits together with the other two songs is pretty incredible. And I have written some notes down here. I probably should do it at the end of the medley, but we might do it now. But you've been in the world's biggest band for, what, 10 years? You've been together for longer than that, started out doing nothing. You've worked through, you've achieved this incredible fame. You've got to this point where you know, and I think it's fair to say by this stage, Paul was the driving force behind the Beatles. If there wasn't Paul, there wasn't the Beatles. He was holding them together. He'd held them together to this point. This was as long as he could hold them together for. I think to know that this is it, man. This is the last thing we're ever going to do. So you know what? I'm going to do this song and I'm going to send us out on a high. Could you do a better job? I really don't think that if you could plan your final album, if you're a songwriter, a musician, you're in a band, you go, you know, this is our last album. I know this is the last three songs. You couldn't plan a better song and then a better three songs to finish it. I just don't think you can.
It is really well done. And whether he had a long-term plan to do that or whether it came together with the track listing, I'm not sure. But it's definitely a statement. And from Golden Slumbers, they're going to Carry That Weight, which is really part two of Golden Slumbers. And there is a shift in tone and mood, but I think if you know Golden Slumbers, then you know Carry That Weight. Now, my new favorite part of this song is, it's not a call and response, you call it a callback.
A musical callback.
Is that what it's called? A musical callback. Where they go into this song, Carry That Weight, and then they start paying respect by playing the melody to You Never Give Me Your Money, which, if you remember, listeners, was earlier up in the track listing, its own song. I was complaining to you, changes mood way too quick. The melody just changes. But they bring it back and Carry That Weight. And I think that is pure genius.
They have done a couple of reprises. They did the Sgt. Pepper's reprise. I think it was, again, another one of Paul's favourite moves is we'll do a song. We like the song. We'll give you taste. We'll throw back to it later on to sort of wrap everything up. And I think it really ties basically the whole this whole part of the album, pulls it all together. I guess this is why people would call it one medley, is that you get that musical callback to the first song in the sequence, I guess, to the You Never Give Me Your Money. You come back to it here. The sequence is nearly finished. It's almost like a musical theatre type trick, isn't it, that you throw back to this is the theme of the theme of the album, the musical theme of the album. Let's throw back to it.
Mm. Brilliant. We'll let listeners listen to that one on their own. Carry that weight. And now we come to the end, and that is a song by the Beatles on Abbey Road. And it features a drum solo. You call it a drum solo. I'm going to say a drum feature. Everything drops out and the drums are there.
Yeah, fair enough.
Close to a solo.
I think this is, well, this is pretty much the only, for want of a better term, solo that Ringo ever did. Ringo was against doing drum solos. He hated drummers that would do big, long drum solos. They actually had to goad him into doing this. He didn't want to do it at all. There was a bit of prodding to get him to do it. But I think it's a great feature and a great way to build up to the end of the album.
Yeah, and it's a great piece. You've given the melody there a 10 out of 10. That's hard to argue with.
You can only pick one Beatles song. Now I'm going to cheat and combine the three tracks into one. I think it's fair enough to call it one song. It's one song. There's three tracks, but it's one song. I think if you told me you can only listen to one Beatles song forever on repeat, it's these three songs.
Ooh, that's a big call. That's a big call. And then we do have a run-out track. Do you want to explain everyone what a run-out track is? Who don't know, of course. I'm sure most people do. But
well, these days, I guess, Schnaz, if you're listening on Spotify or your music streamer or you've got the CD, there's a song right at the end called Her Majesty. It's actually listed as a track. Now, when I had the – well, not I had. My dad had the album of Abbey Road, which was, I guess, maybe not a first edition, but it was an early pressing. Her Majesty isn't even listed as a track on the album. It was basically – it was meant to go between – Mean Mr. Mustard and Polythene Pam, they didn't like how it listened, and Paul basically said, cut this out, chuck it, and get rid of it. Now, I know that all the engineers and whatnot around that time with the Beatles were basically told, never throw anything out. So they stuck this on the end of the track. That's why there's a big, long thing of silence in between. The chord you actually hear at the start of it is the end of Mean Mr. Mustard, the last chord of it.
Oh.
That's why you get that funny chord at the start. And then, yeah, you had this, the Her Majesty coming, a little bit of a Paul Diddy there. I wouldn't even really... We've sort of talked about this. I don't really even consider this as a track on there. It's like a bit of a bonus. Hey, what's this at the end? I wouldn't really call it a track.
The secret track.
The secret track, yeah.
That was a big thing in the 90s on the CDs, the secret track. I like it. That's probably as country as this record's going to get. I find the subject matter quite funny but also endearing. I don't know if we can look that deep into it. But
it's very Paul, yeah. It's a very Paul lyric. He's whimsical. John would probably call this granny music as well.
He would, and it is. It is. I don't know. Is that the right definition? Are we offending people? Is it the right term?
Well, I think if it's a direct quote, it's okay. Yeah, he said it was granny music. If you've got an issue with it, take it up with John Lennon's estate.
So that's Abbey Road. That's our rundown of Abbey Road. What are your final thoughts? What are you thinking?
Well, I'm interested to know what you think, Schnaz. As we said, we know that I sort of grew up with this. I've always really liked it. I think it's definitely a worthwhile album for people to, if you haven't heard much of the Beatles or you've only heard sort of the Beatles, if you've accidentally put WSFM on and you've heard She Loves You.
now you're offending WSFM.
I think it's fair to say that, maybe even older than WSFM now, probably, what's the easy listening station in Sydney? Have you still got a 2SM or a...
Hasn't Brooksy taken over all that? I don't know. I know what you're saying. I really liked this album. I'm glad we picked this one to start with. And the whole premise of this podcast, as we said at the start, was one of us hasn't listened to or isn't aware of an album that the other thinks we'd like. And as someone who hadn't listened to this album for a long time, I'm not going to put years on it, but a long time, it's impressive. As far as genre goes, it's different than what I thought. It's less messed up drug influence than I thought it was going to be. It's way less pop than I remember it, although it does have some pop moments. Overall, it's a strong selection of songs. And there are songs that I would lose if I was Mr. Producer or Mr. Record Company man or woman. But overall, it's a good collection of songs. The album doesn't drag, I think, because of the medleys. It doesn't drag on and on and on. You get to sort of like, I Want You, and you're like, oh, this song's 7 minutes. Yeah. A lot of jamming going on. But the album itself doesn't lag, doesn't drag, doesn't carry on too long. And it's their swan song. You got to respect that. I really like it. If out of 10, I would definitely give it an 8.
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's perfect like all the Pitchfork people, etc.
Yeah.
But it's certainly strong, and it certainly tells a story, and I'm glad we got back into it. I think what helped me, though, was I watched the doco on Let It Be 2 months ago.
I don't think that can hurt.
Yeah.
I think if you want to get into the mood and see, I guess really see what the vibe was around the band, yeah, I think that's fair enough that you... If you watch Get Back recently, or if you haven't watched it, watch Get Back. It's amazing. Is it four hours long? I think it's four.
I think it's longer.
Longer than that.
Might be six.
Just, it doesn't seem like that. You basically sit there and watch these four guys still really at the top of their game. The way they put it together is just fascinating. That they just
there's no 30 years later. It's in the moment.
Yeah, it's just a amazing piece of documentary making. And even if you don't like the Beatles, if you're interested in music in any way, I think if you watch this and didn't find it fascinating, I'd just be astounded. I just found it fascinating the way that they came. Have you got a song? Oh, yeah, I've got this. Play a bit of a song, and then from there they just work the magic and off they go.
There's different elements too. If you were interested in pop culture and see how a band gets really big and how they deal with it, well, this is a perfect example, how they rebel against it. How do you wind up a band? How do you end this legendary status? There's lots of different ways to look at it. Bands recording, there's a lot of engineering going on, and it's essentially they're making the record.
I just love the people wandering in and out too. Just, hey, this is this guy, this is this guy.
There's a few hanger-oners, that's for sure. I don't think that really helped necessarily the band, a few hanger-oners, but...
It definitely sets this album, though. You sort of get the vibe of this is where they were at. Like, this album was recorded basically right after that was going on. So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And there are storylines in that documentary which we have talked about and we won't talk any more about, but you can hear it in this. You can hear it in John. You can hear it in George. You can even hear it in Paul. I don't know about Ringo, but you can hear it in Paul. Like, he's, as you said, this musical genius trying to keep it together. He's there every day. He's the strong constant in the band during that time. He's the one making the start times. We'll be here at 10 o'clock, you know. Everyone cool for that. Like, he's organizing them, basically.
Yeah. It was really his baby by that point in time.
And you can hear it in the way he puts all the songs together that he's involved with. But I think it's a good team effort. We did say John, it's probably the least involved John's been. But George steps up, puts in two of his stronger songs at the very least. So
I think it's definitely the stronger of their later albums. I think if you want to listen to some Beatles stuff and yet you haven't listened to much Beatles, you're going to go back and listen to their really early stuff. You just have to do that because everybody's heard it, you know. There is a period, I guess, through Sgt. Pepper's is acquired taste. The White Album's pretty out there.
Yes.
I think Let It Be's okay. I like Let It Be, the album, but I think Abbey Road is just in terms of let's finish up, it was a good note to go out on.
One last question. I think it'll be the last question. Have you had your photo taken in the crossing?
I have, but it's very embarrassing, and I'll never show it to anybody ever.
Why is it embarrassing?
Just because it's very hard to do the fake walk, to look like you're walking, and it looks like I'm trying to fake walk.
If we do get some socials,
I'll see if I can find it, and we'll put it up.
That'll have to be the cover of the episode, maybe. Did I have anything else to ask you? Were there hundreds of people lining up to take their photo?
There was, and there was, because all the hawkers around trying to get money out of them, saying, I'll take your photo if you pay me £5. Yeah, it's a thing. I think they've actually moved the crossing. It's not in the same spot that it used to be. So
don't the people in the cars get a bit annoyed?
It's not a hugely busy road, and they wait for buses to go. That's what I think. They sort of stand there in the high vis and try and look official. And it's like, mate, you're just here trying to scam people out of money.
That's amazing.
Did we want to do your favourite songs? Maybe like add to your why don't we have a permanent Spotify, a permanent playlist, and then maybe a skip forever we could do.
Okay. So, my permanent playlist will have something.
Can I guess what they are?
Sure.
Can I guess?
Sure.
We'll go, well, you said something. That would have been one of my guesses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Octopus's Garden might go in there. I think you were a bit taken by that.
Keep
going. Maybe Here Comes the Sun.
Definitely Here Comes the Sun.
And the second medley.
Second medley. I'm going to leave out Octopus's Garden, but I did like it more than I thought, and the more I listened to it, the more I liked it. But it's not going on my permanent playlist.
Do you want to guess my three?
Yes. Your three are Maxwell Silverhammer.
Yep. There's one.
And Here Comes the Sun.
Yep, two.
And the second medley.
And the Gimme, the second medley.
There you go. I know you well.
What about your skip? Because you skip, you're never going to hear this song again, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, I don't like this sort of negativity, Wally. But if I have to, I'm throwing in Maxwell's Silver Hammer. And it's not a... I don't hate it,
yep.
But I need to hear it ever again.
I completely understand where you're coming from.
Maxwell's Silver Hammer, I'd probably go Sun King.
Sun King's hard because it's in the middle of one of the medleys.
Yeah, I'll say the first medley because I don't really need to hear a couple of those.
Yep. But you want to hear You Never Give Me Your Money at the start.
Oh, I do, don't I?
Yeah.
So I can't say that.
Tough one.
All right. I'll say I Want You. She's So Heavy.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd consign any of these to the bin that I'd never want to hear again, but we're going to force me to.
Just for the purpose of it, yeah.
I reckon we could lose because.
Okay. Then you're just picking one.
Yeah, I think that's really the only. I think I Want You, She's So Heavy is a. I don't mind hearing it. Yeah, I think that's fair enough.
If Wait, did you say because?
Yeah, because, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think that's it's a bit of a.
Okay.
And I think I Want You, She's So Heavy is a. Yeah, it's a mood, not a song. I think
if you're in the mood,
I think if you're driving along, you know what? If you're angry about something or you're a bit down in the dumps and you just want to hear, I would just want to scream. And yeah, I'm not putting the song down. And if you want to hear John Lennon properly scream, you've got to listen to it because he does give a proper yeah in the middle of the song, and it is pretty amazing to hear him do that. But yeah, I think happy enough to get rid of that, but focus on the positives and yeah, the last medley. Get it in your playlist.
I think we'll wrap there, Wally. This has been the first episode of the album Adventures. We're not sure what album 2 will be. We've got a list
of haven't told me yet, Chaz, so this is it's your pick next time. So it's your pick.
You'll know when we're recording. Well, the listeners will know when we're recording. You'll know a little bit before that. And we'll try and get back to you soon. We're not sure how often we'll be doing this, but it will be a regular podcast. So if you want to like us and subscribe to us and all that kind of thing, we'd appreciate it. And don't be too harsh on us. It's our first episode. You know, we're used to just talking about line breaks and things. So that's a rugby league joke if you don't know what a line break is. Overall, I'm giving the album an 8. What did you give it?
Yeah, I think probably 8.5, I would say.
Okay. Did I say 8 before?
I think you said 8 before.
Yeah.
I think 8's a good score. And as I said, I'm the one who put forward this album adventure.
You did.
We hope you enjoyed the album adventure.
We
and
do.
Yeah, if you do like the Beatles or you kind of have a vague liking of the Beatles, I wouldn't hesitate to recommend this to anyone.